Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. I'm riding solo today, as usual, but I'm going to go ahead and get into the usual particulars. Got a lot of kickboxing to talk about, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun with today's show. You are going to be listening to my show, or you are listening to my show in one of two ways. Either you are at the direct blog, which is at lordgaul.podbean.com. I post that to my Twitter, Stephen the Warman, one word. So twitter.com/StephenTheWarman. I post this to my Twitter, the direct blog, lordgaul. I put that to my Twitter almost every single time. The goal, of course, is I always want to, use social media to get the show out there. But the most efficient way to be listening to my kickboxing podcast show is, of course, to go through the iTunes search engine. Either enter Warman Kickfighting Show or enter Lord Gaul and the show pops right up. Got a lot to talk about, as I mentioned before. Missed a couple weeks. Thanks a lot for a lot of the well wishes and for the kind words and for the compliments about, my fighter Johnny Hendricks striking. And, it was a close fight. And, with him and Robbie, I was busy. That's why I wasn't able to do the podcast show the last couple weeks. I've just been crazy busy, been out of town and just been on the road. And it's been really, really tough. So I apologize for that. But I did want to take a short moment to say thank you to all those who've been, supporting my fighter throughout the years. Hopefully they give us a rematch. It was a close fight. But credit to Robbie Lawler, who really pushed well at the end of the fight. I'm not the kind of person to take something from somebody. I really believe that each athlete goes out there with the goal to win, and if the other person gets their hand raised, credit to them for being able to do that. And hopefully we'll get our shot. They haven't confirmed anything yet, but we would love it if we got the third fight with Robbie. But thank you very much for all the people who supported the show, who've been following the Kickboxing Podcast Show, and who know that I am the striking coach here at Team Takedown in Arlington, Texas, and know that I work with Johnny Hendricks and a lot of other athletes that fight at the UFC level. So I really appreciate that. And then again, another appreciation to the kind words. I posted a video recently of me holding pads for Muhammad Lawal, and people had posted words, kind words to me on Twitter, and I got some messages over Facebook and stuff like that. I appreciate it. My goal is just to, if you come into our gym, I want to do my best to help you accomplish your dreams in mixed martial arts, kickboxing, Muay Thai, or boxing. I love combat sports, and I love that this my hobby is my career. So thank you again for all the kind words in those regards. Let's go ahead and get into the action. First of all, I'm going to go ahead and talk about a couple of the events that I missed. First event I want to talk about is the S Cup that went down in Japan. And unfortunately, S Cup it's going to end what was a pretty decent card that a lot of people were looking forward to, that a lot of people were excited about. But unfortunately, the takeaway that people got from it is that it was unfair and that it was biased towards Japanese fighters, and that the promotion really, almost gave itself a black eye in the way that they had performed in certain manners. I'll go ahead and start breaking down the fights, and then I'll go ahead and rest and stay a little bit longer in the areas of, concern, if you will, as far as how fighters were treated and how decisions came out and so on. So, first of all, Hiroki Suzuki gets a victory over Zachariah Zugari. It was a TKO in the second, that's the final. I'll go ahead and start and go from bottom up. Basically, we started off with Suzuki going against Pornsenai Setmanchai. I thought that Pornsenai would be able to get the victory here, even though Suzuki, of course, is the guy who won the previous tournament a couple years ago at this 65 kg weight limit. But I like Pornsenai. I think that he should probably consider stop fighting because he's been stopped a lot. And even as we speak, he's supposed to be fighting again tomorrow. So definitely worried about, I have a concern for his health in the long run. But usually when he's in there, as far as action goes aesthetically, he's usually going to bring the hands and he's going to, have a combination kick style. He's going to exchange and he's going to battle, and people are going to love what they see. I believe he was, nominated for the fight of the year, and a fight that he was stopped in, but he came back so well in it. It was an early fight. I think it was only a 2-round fight, but he delivers that kind of action. I thought that in the first round he would give Suzuki trouble and enough to get him on to the next round. But, Suzuki stayed composed. He's got a weird style where Suzuki switches stances a lot and he keeps at a distance, and sometimes he fires singles. But he put a good combination together that had a high kick and then hands followed it, and he was able to drop horns and iron. Really, really good stuff. And then Suzuki moves on. Masaba Morani gets a decision victory over Neshihiro Wiki Satoshi. it's really important that people realize how strong a year Mustafa Mirani really had. You know what, you go back to his victory over Yuta Kubo, you go back to, you know, his some of the fights that he had in Glory, his consistency. Mustafa Mirani has quietly had a pretty good year for himself. And if decision had gone his way later on the card, it would have continued to have a good year. He could have been undefeated for the year, you know, if I'm remembering correctly. But, you know, he gets this victory and he moves on. Combination style, big hands and his aggression move him forward. But, man, I really, really thought that Mustafa Mirani would be going further in this tournament. But I'll go ahead and move on to what would be the first strange moment of the fight. Michihiro Omagawa gets a victory over Kevin Ross. It was a TKO in the second round. And basically, as it happened, the headbutt was accidental. You know, there was no intention. But, you know, clearly in Omagawa's positioning, it seemed like he kind of did it to himself a little bit. But I don't think that it was his intentions. But I'm not going to stir on that. I mean, headbutts happen. That kind of happened or whatever. And again, Omagawa was up because of the shoot throws, because of the shoot scoring. You can make the argument that he was up 10-7. So all he had to do was survive for the next two rounds and not go down, and he could have, you know, advanced over Kevin Ross. That's how high they score those judo throws and the shoot scoring. But it just after the clash, you know, which is really the story of the fight, they, you know, pronounce that, you know, Kevin Ross is the winner, and then they go in the back. And then they discuss some things for a while, and somehow Kevin Ross, who is, you know, given the win by the judge, is now by the promotion taken out of the fight due to the clash of heads. Now, a lot of people felt like they you know, the promotion really wanted an Omagawa and Suzuki finale, but, you know, whatever side you fall on, that's neither here nor there. The strange thing to me was just the way that it went about, and, you know, Kevin Ross, of course, it wasn't his fault. All he's doing is going out there and competing to the best of his ability. Had what happened, it wasn't intentional. He did not know or have any, you know, designs on just ruining the promotion's plans outside of defeating the guy in front of him, but it seems like they went in the back. Some things were talked. Kevin talked about it, and you know, he's got a really long interview that you guys can look up out there that he kind of gives his description of what happened backstage. But basically, they didn't want him to advance due to the fact that he, well, you know, was losing, or due to the fact that, you know, they really wanted Omagawa to move forward, and unfortunately, Omagawa was out. So then they wanted to move in someone. I guess this is, I mean, people kind of have these arguments, you know, throughout, but maybe they wanted to move in to, you know, somebody who they thought they had a better opportunity of losing to the eventual champion Suzuki down the road. Whatever the case was, Kevin Ross was not allowed to move on, and they instead took Zachariah Zugari from the undercard, who had won a you know, reserve fight, and they moved him into the tournament field. Last fight of the four in that first round, Hiroki Shishido, who has fought at the 70kg one, at much bigger. I thought that he was going to be able to have an advantage over Haosin Banui. It is not the case. Banui was able to get a victory here, and I want to stir here for a moment just to say, man, shout out to Nasser Kassim's boys, who what promotion are they not fighting on? I mean, the Leon boys don't get enough credit for how much he gets those guys. Nasser Kassim gets his guys international opportunities. I'm talking Thai fight. I'm talking Max Muay Thai. I'm talking shoot boxing here. We're talking K1. We're talking Glory. We're talking, you know, Yakao. They're fighting everywhere, you know, and he's doing a good job of keeping his guys active and keeping them busy and giving them good big fight opportunities, you know. I'm going to come out with my awards, you know, next week. I'll probably take next week off, and then I'll do one show before the year ends. It'll be my year-end show, give out awards and so on. But I definitely am leaning towards Nasser Kassim as coach of the year, despite the fact that, you know, didn't have as big a wins as he's gotten in the past. It's just what a great job for a, you know, manager/fight coach to get his guys all these international opportunities on such a regular basis. He's doing a great job. Congrats to Banui on moving to the semifinal. In the semifinal, Suzuki fights Mustafa Mirani, and by all accounts, Mustafa Mirani should have won the fight. Hiroki Suzuki is just, he's reduced to single shots. He almost never sat down and threw combinations. Everything was just kind of a single and a move and a single and a move. Masab walked him down, threw in exchanges all the time. I thought it was an easy fight to score. Shout out to the, I can't pronounce his name because I don't, not that I can't pronounce it, but I don't know it. But there's a guy who had, his name is, you know, in Japanese writing, and he was a YouTube subscriber, and he had filmed the fight, or he has a version of the fight filmed from the audience. He had great positioning, and that's how I was able to watch the fights. From the view that I got to watch, Musab Amirani clearly, you know, was winning the fight. Like, if it just, it wasn't in debate, you know, and it's not like he landed the killer shots that he'd landed in the past. He just consistently won the rounds. So when Suzuki won that fight and moved on, it was like, okay, here we go again. First we have Kevin Ross not being able to move further into the tournament. Now we have Musab Amirani, who probably should have won, and Suzuki moves on to the tournament. It's just, it's unfortunate that it happened that way, you know. And it's crazy because I did an interview with Kristina Jurjevic earlier in the year from Australia, and she talked about how she thought that there was a chance that there wasn't going to be another shoeboxing card. Like, maybe they're in money trouble or sponsor trouble or whatever. Maybe that pressure of them, because this was a big show. This is their biggest show of the year. And this is after Christina, who said she loves fighting for the promotion, wants to fight for shoeboxing in future. And she was worried that the promotion wouldn't be around. I'm worried that the promotion maybe felt whatever pressure that's coming from whatever outside entity, whatever sponsor, whatever, maybe they felt that they had to have a Japanese champion. Whether or not they had to intercede or not is just the weird thing, because Suzuki is, you know, a solid fighter who won this tournament before. But whatever the case, he moves forward to the final over Musab Amirani. Zakaria Zaghari then goes out and probably scares the promotion a little bit from the audience, because he put on a pretty solid kickboxing performance, and the right-hand KO he scored over Hassan Benoit is absolutely awesome. Beautiful stuff. He moves into the finals after that, and I'm sure a lot of people at that point are wondering, you know, the ringer that we brought in might be tougher than some of the guys that we, you know, let slide through the tournament before. Maybe we should have seen what would have happened if it had have been, you know, Kevin Ross or whatever. Zakaria was game. Kevin Ross was game. There was no way that they were going to get out of this without having a legitimate challenger come from that side of the bracket. And their attempts to put Zakaria in, reserve doesn't mean weak. It just means you didn't get in the main four fights. So they go into the final, and then again, and I watched this, it was such a clear kickboxing clinic by Zakaria Zaghari. It's just weird because I'm telling you, combinations, low kicks, it was just clean kickboxing excellence for three rounds, and I thought he won all three rounds. I just thought that I can't make an argument for Suzuki winning any of those rounds. Even the moments where he tried to bite down and throw and the crowd tried to get behind him, he was coming up short. He didn't throw a lot of shots for them to get enough behind him. These rounds weren't close. This had the exact same kind of feel that, for those of you who, just not as dominant, but for those of you old-timers who remember back in the early 2000s when Bacall burst on the scene and he goes against Masato in the final, and really he just smashes Masato. No kidding aside, Bacall smashed Masato when they met in the K-1 World Grand Prix final after three rounds, in particular in that third round. There is no argument whatsoever to be made for Masato winning that fight. And somehow they went to an extra round, so Masato smashed him, or got smashed for another round, thanks to Bukau being consistent, being in shape, being ready to go. But the feel of it was, after those three rounds, man, they don't want this guy to win. And just like how another example of that would be Remy Bonjasky versus Musashi in their second fight. You know, it's like they put a huge promotional push behind Musashi. He got the right kind of bracketing that anybody could have asked for. You know, he took the slope that was the easiest road. He still kept fighting extra round fights, but what would have been considered the easier road in comparison to, Remy Bonjasky fighting Houston in his first fight. But then they get to the final, and then the third round of the fight between Musashi and Bonjasky in the second final that they had met in was the most dominant, most clear round of any fight of the night in that tournament. It was just a clear beating by Remy Bonjasky. After Remy Bonjasky, you know, won that round, and you think he gets a decision, they go to an extra round. He then goes out and wins the next extra round. I think maybe I can think of three or four total strikes that Musashi threw in that extra round. And I thought Remy Bonjasky won that round too. And then they went to an extra. And even when I interviewed him for the show and I asked, you know, for the documentary, for those who watched, he goes, man, I knew they wanted him to win that thing. He said, if they could have had me fight forever, I would have fought forever. I knew they wanted Musashi to win. That's the feeling that I had watching Hiroki Suzuki go against Zakurai Zogari and having them go to a second extra round. I felt like they were going to do it until Suzuki won. And then Suzuki got, you know, the standing stop. I mean, they called it a TKO. It was in the corner. Zogari didn't go down. The ref just kind of stepped in and called it right at the end of the second extension round and then made Hiroki Suzuki the champion. And I got to give him credit. You know, he hung around. It was a good finish to that round, and he really did have Zakaria in trouble. But man, it's just the whole event has a black eye when you just think about what happened with Kevin Ross, what happened with Sal Romani. You can't have these questions. It's unfortunate. You know, congrats to Suzuki. I don't know if he's in on this or not. You know, he's just going out there competing and trying to win. And if he had a loss, I think he would have just taken it as a loss. But, man, the whole event of the shootboxing card has a black eye due to this. But I'm hoping that they bounce back because shootboxing is a great product. They put on awesome fights. They've given a lot of high-level fighters opportunities to fight on a big stage. They give them the opportunity to go over Japan, have that experience. I love the standing judo throws. I like the shootboxing rules. I think it's an interesting twist on kickboxing, a twist on kickboxing that I can, you know, understand and that I could ride with a little bit. Man, it's just so unfortunate that this is what's attached to this event as well. I'm going to go ahead and mention a couple of the, super fights. Rina gets a decision over Isis. I'm going to forget her last name. But Rina, again, kickboxing excellence, the bigger, stronger fighter, more experienced and veteran in the kickboxing skill set. I love Rena anytime she's competing. She is the face of the women's organization. She's pretty and she's skilled, and they want to keep putting her out there as much as they can. They want to grow their brand, so good stuff there. And then Andy Sauer, who gets his second TKO stoppage or KO victory in as many weeks, as he, you know, 7 days removed from a KO victory, goes back to work, does a number on Kuniyoshi Hironaka. And Hironaka, I thought, was trying to be game in moments, but man, Andy Sauer was just way better. Put the hands together, was continuously dropping him, and then they threw in the towel in the third. And Kuniyoshi put up good effort, but he was going against the beast of a fighter. Andy Sauer gets him out of there. Also, if you like KOs, the Fushimi Kazuyuki, his KO over Takai's victory over Kazuyuki was a really cool KO. Put the hands together well there, and a good jumping knee or flying knee kind of KO finish was a lot of good stuff in that way. And for those who are curious, Bovi was the guy who Zakaria beat in the reserve fight. It was a cut stoppage, and I think maybe that kind of got people into thinking that, you know, Zakaria might be the kind of guy to bring into the tournament. Maybe he got a little bit lucky. But, man, Bovi would have been the guy I would have been trying to get in. Why was there no shenanigans to get Bovi into the tournament? Because Bovi's hittable. I'm surprised that they weren't trying to negotiate to have him join that other bracket and have him possibly be the guy at the end for Suzuki. But, oh, well, the card, I thought all in all was a solid card. I thought there was a lot of entertaining kickboxing. But there's no way you can look or talk about this S Cup card without the things that happened to Kevin Ross and things that happened with Zakaria, and then the thing, of course, with Musab Mirani. Those three names and what happened to them and their situation are the things that I took away from this S Cup in particular. But hopefully it won't be that way in the future. I've never said this before about S Cup fights. They've been close. They've gone extra rounds. Never have I really looked at their card and say, man, I just don't know what this time, you know. I think they usually do a good job overall. I think they do a good job being relatively fair in terms of the scoring. The matchups can be a little weird sometimes, but I guess I was disappointed that it went down the way it did, and I always want better for the sport, so I never want this sort of thing to kind of blacken the eye, if you will. I'm going to go ahead and hit up the stadiums. Of course, we've got other cards that I want to talk about, but man, I want to keep mixing it up. There was a big King's Birthday show on the 9th at the new Lumpini Stadium, and there's a lot of good fights. I'm going to go ahead and talk about some of the big ones. At 126 pounds, Superbank gets a victory over Thaksinlek, and I thought that the the skill level in the fight, one of my favorite things about it is I thought that it did a good job of showing different aspects of the fight. I thought that there was a series where they were throwing combinations and high kicks, kind of hands to kickboxing flow. There was a series where they were into the clinch. There was a series where they were playing a distance teep game. I thought that it was a really, really good showing by both guys. I thought that the pacing and the jab of Thatsenleck had given him some really, really good moments. But I thought overall the skill by Superbank, who was kind of winning the fight everywhere, was the difference. I really enjoyed his pacing, and I loved kind of the I've seen him fight a lot of times now, and he's not a standout in my mind as far as some of the ties that I like to watch. But I definitely was very entertained by his fight, and I thought he did a good job as Superbank gets the victory. One of the fights that I most definitely enjoyed from start to finish was Sprinter over Chisiri. And my thing with this, at 117 pounds, the single kick, there was a period where I'd say the grappling scores and the takedowns of Chisiri were the things that he was really trying to push to get himself into the fight. He was definitely working in clinch, definitely doing a good job of you know, moving and being aggressive and so on. But there was a period of time where, man, the single leg scores, the single kick scores, Sprinter was really doing a good job. He had scored a tricky head kick in the series. And then Sprinter, if you've ever seen him fight before, he's very much a showman. I like him between rounds. I like him between exchanges. He's got a smile about his face. He pumps his fist. He gets into it. He's the kind of guy that I like to watch fight. He is one of my, you know, I won't say one of my favorites, but one of the guys that I really like to watch in the stadiums. 117 pounds. At 117 pounds, Sprinter, I mean, just as I said it, Sprinter, very entertaining. He gets the victory here. Definitely a guy to watch. And one of the cooler KOs you're ever going to see, Yatungthai gets a KO over Pacquiao. And it's basically, the fight starts off, I'm telling you, we're less than 10 seconds in a fight. The elbow that ends the fight is scored early in the first round. Basically, between it, I call it crashing the 1-2. Whenever a guy looks to throw a 1-2, there are people like a Tyrone Spong that's brave enough to try to sit on an exchange shot inside of a 1-2. So you read the jab and you crash it with your power hand. And in that way, Yatungthai did a good job of sitting in the very first exchange, very first moment. Pacquiao comes out, throws the jab to get into a 1-2 series, and then a firing elbow comes right over the top, counter power hand elbow from Yatungthai, and it drops Pacquiao, and they call it a slip. Then he stands up, and Pacquiao was in trouble from the jump. I thought if Yatungthai would have jumped on him right away, he could have probably won by KO in the first 10, 20 seconds of the fight. He didn't. And this is something that I've seen before. When I went to Thailand and I went to Lumpini Stadium, I went to the old Lumpini Stadium when I was there. And I remember there was a guy who, in the first exchange of the fight, he had scored something big and it dropped the other guy. And the guy, they called it a slip and they let the guy stand up. And I was like, that guy's out on his feet. He is already out. And instead of going for the kill, he just patiently played the game, picked him apart, round two, went ahead, went out there, and got the KO stoppage. I don't know if it's connected to the gambling or if there's like a pace to it that there's expected or if this has something to do with the show that you're supposed to be giving as a fighter. But I could see consistency in that when a guy gets really hurt, unless you're going against like a, you know, Porcinai. A guy gets really, really hurt, he's going to try to, you know, Porcinai's going to try to kill you every moment. But so far, when I've seen big shots land in kind of the feel-out round of the first round, that KO doesn't come right after it. They usually wait to the second round, and then they usually get the job done right. Yatungthai did a good job of being patient. Again, a counter elbow scores him a down in the second, and then Pacquiao threw a 1-2, and he crashed it with a big overhand elbow. Just absolutely crushing score. Yatungthai gets the victory and moves on. 127-pound winner for you. Next fight I want to talk about is the Konkla versus our Konkla's win at 115 pounds over Wanchulong. And I thought that it was a pretty, won't say even fight. I think it was different tactically. Konkla did a good job of landing a lot of single kicks and, you know, using a lot of movement, you know, kind of scoring in between shots. Whereas Wanchulong, in particular, early in the fourth, was really pushing the pressure in the face, looking to get into the grapple, really looking to, you know, tie up Konkla and kind of make the fight ugly. Not necessarily, I won't say ugly, but make the fight gritty, make it tougher, make it a clinch battle, drain him, keep him from landing those single scores. Then all of a sudden, Kenkla gets backed into the corner, and he unloads like four or five power kicks with the left leg. Just starts banging them. And Wanchulong just takes them all clean. If you guys who've been following my podcast show for a while, sometimes I'll get different people on, and they'll talk about the scoring in Thailand and how it works and so on. And one of my favorite things about this one is this one goes to those who say significant scores matter. And so if, like, you kick me in the body, my arm gets up, that's one thing. You kick me in the body and it gets under my arm and hits me in the ribs, that's a completely different thing. And Kenkla landed like 5-6 shots in a row while he was in the corner. And Wanchulong, just looking for the grapple, just took all 5, 6, 7 shots. Eventually he worked in afterwards, but that series put him down. And to kind of get true separation on the card, there was a good job of a turn and tie dump that happened at the end of the, I want to say the end of the fourth round, where he turned him and he was almost like, he got him off balance, he was looking for the kick. Wanchulong, who had been looking for the grapple, had been looking for a clinch off fight, he was turned, and then Kenkla, improved upon this advantage in the fifth round, whereas as the same thing, Wanchulong trying to get close the distance, trying to get into the grapple, trying to get into that position, a tie dump in the round five kind of put an end to the fight. He wasn't going to catch up on the scorecards thanks to this, the clean kicks that he received in the earlier round, and the turn and then the dump at the end of, or during round five, just put the fight out of reach for him. Kenkla did a good job. Another guy who, hey, I like watching this guy. Love watching him perform, and can watch him at any particular period of time. At 118 pounds, we're going to go to Pompayuk, who, if I remember correctly, what was it, March that he was announced as Fighter of the Year? I can't remember when the award was announced, but 118 pounds, he gets a victory over Pranjin Chai. And for those of you who, I don't know what your stance is on Full Rules Muay Thai. Some of you guys might be listening to me as I do this portion of the show, and you're thinking, man, the names are a little bit weird. The way the scoring's done is a little bit weird. It's a lot more in the clinch and so on. Every fight fan in the world will be a fan of how these guys started the fourth and fifth round. They were going at each other. Like, literally, they are aggressive with the combinations. They are aggressive in the clinch. They were battling. Like, you want to see that effort that makes what people would describe as a war in the kickboxing and Muay Thai and boxing and MMA. When people use the term war, they're talking about the opening of the fourth round and fifth round of these fights, because they were absolutely all over each other. I thought that the pressure, and then Pranjin Chai was looking to score sneaky elbows as they were engaging in the clinch. I thought that he had some really good moments, but overall, man, the big left leg score from Pompayuk was able to get him separation, not to mention the fact that Pompayuk is like super tall for 118 pounds, so he was able to keep that separation. And the pressure that Pranjin Chai was putting on, is if you ever get a taller guy, he's a good guy to watch, because he just kept grinding, kept putting the head under the chin, kept pushing forward, tying up the arms, looking to crush Pompayuk, put neutralize his work by keeping his back to the ropes. But Pompayuk did a good job of keeping the left leg going. And then when he needed to, he was able to get a full body clinch, meaning that he got his arms, both arms tied around the back, was able to score knees. And he didn't even necessarily dump him. As soon as he got into those positions, both the ref and, the judges, of course, ringside, give him the score for getting in that dominant clinch position. Because if you give up your lower back like that, all they have to do is turn you down. As soon as you get that full body lock, both arms, I guess gable grip style, if you will, for the wrestling fans, but these guys got gloves on, so it's not necessarily gable grip. But if you can get yourself into that lower body and you get both arms behind the back, I don't care if the other person reaches for a full Thai plum on top of your neck, you're done. Really good elite Thais, you almost never see them. And by almost never, I'm telling you, like, maybe 1% of the time you're going to see them in what you would call a mixed martial art-esque full plum with both arms up and the head trapped between the forearms with both hands behind the neck. You're almost never going to see that in Full Rules Muay Thai, because those guys are so good at stepping close with their legs and then getting into full body lock positions, and that's a dump score for them. Instead of getting the dump, Pompayuk just kind of got position, scored a few knees. In particular, he was able to do this on the end of the fourth and in the fifth. And the moment he did it, the ref just came in, called the breakup, and he got the big score. Pompayuk was your winner. Another fight, and this was a one of those fights, if you really like clinch jumps, sweeps, and turns. Long Tai did a, you know, 130 pounds, did a great job of being in a back and forth clinch battle, clinch jump battle with Pinnock. And in this fight, I'm telling you, these guys, you're going to see sweeps. You're going to see them get full body lock turns. You're going to see them get, you know, pummel inside and still look for opportunities to turn, sometimes kneeing the leg out and then spinning a guy. It just was a awesome job by both guys of playing the game back and forth. And the weird thing about it is both Muang Thai and Pinnock fought at a slower pace. So it's not like when third, fourth, and fifth hit, you know, that you kind of see the aggression pick up, or it's like, all right, now it's time to win this fight. That didn't happen at all. They just stayed at the same pacing, not in a hurry, very, very patient, moving slow, and just working and working and working. But it wasn't dull at all. Both guys did a great job of getting turns. Both guys did a great job of getting tricky sweeps. Muangthai versus Pinnock, Pennake. I'm spelling that out for you guys so that you can see. If you want to get your Thai dump game going, if you want to know how to get throws and get, you know, the scores that they get in full rules Thai boxing in the stadium, if you want to know how to do those throws, if you want to see a good example of them live in a fight, you're going to get about 12 examples to come out of the clinch jump and sweep battle that happened between Muang Thai and Pinnock. I'm just telling you that it was just an awesome fight. And the separator, I would say, is Pinnock, who did a good job early of being able to use a Muang Thai was using a kind of a cross face to kind of hit, and he was going really, really deep across Pinnock's face. He was like really grinding up, and Pinnock every single time was able to step the left leg to the outside and just kind of pull him back and forth, and was able to get sweeps on him. And no sooner than it happened, Muang Thai would get up, and then he would get into like a kicking exchange, and he would read Pinnock, who would kind of pick his leg up to read the check. And as soon as he saw that the check was coming, he would then use that to counter the balance and then get a sweep of his own. Muang Thai versus Pinnock did a great job. Muang Thai was able to get a few more sweeps, and he was able to play a single kick game that happened sporadically throughout the fight, and I was able to get him the decision. The last fight I'm going to talk about on this, you know, King's Birthday, you know, New Lumpini Stadium card is Pakorn versus Pornpot. And Pakorn came out with a, you know, very combination low kick style, like was very, very patient, you know, wasn't in a hurry for anything. And then all of a sudden he started to look for the left hook. He's been scoring some big KOs and some big downs in guys as he's been doing international competition this year. I'm a big fan of seeing the high-level Thai guys go international. I think nothing's going to give them the exposure that they deserve, like going over to a different country for people to see just how good they are. It's one thing to watch them in the stadiums, and it's almost like people can kind of disregard it. It's like, oh, you're just doing that against another small Thai or against another Thai, or you guys have already fought each other six times. And, you know, people usually don't give them the respect that they are due until you see them on the international circuit. When you get them on the international circuit, you get a like an event like a Kao where they bring in an elite Thai, or they bring in a team of elite Thais. And, you know, like they do in Holland with the Slam organization, those Thais aren't always, you know, legit or elite. But the goal is to bring in international Thais to fight these guys on a high level in international opportunities. And that gives you a really good look at just how good these guys are. In those opportunities, Pakorn has been really icing people with his left hook. He's been scoring it. And I thought as he got back into it, he was, you know, overextended. I thought he missed a couple times with the left hook. I thought he got into it a little bit too much. Pornpatch, you know, who had given up rounds, you know, one and two. Some people say they don't score the first couple rounds. They do. And in those rounds, I thought that he had visibly hurt, you know, Pornpatch with the low kicks. Pornpatch took a few, and then all of a sudden he started trying to check him. And lucky for him, he started to make it a grapple battle, and then there was not another low kick from Pakorn for a very, very long time. But in that grapple battle, I thought that, you know, the pressure from Pornpatch was good, but the legitimate scores were not. So he'd get into the grapple, he'd try to push, you know, push and pull and you know, get different positions on Pakorn. But Pakorn's just seen it all. Very patient, stayed right in front of him, scored power knees on his own. And when there was separation, let his hands fly, you know, fours and fives. able to score in a good series. And Pecorin, really a kind of ho-hum kind of victory. I felt he was better throughout. I thought Porn Petra was, you know, really kind of fighting uphill the whole time. I never thought that he got a really good grasp of the fight. Never thought that he did anything to kind of advance his situation on the cards. I thought that it was a solid victory for Pecorin, but he has fought more elite guys at 135 pounds. I thought it was really cool that he came in and he did his white crew with the title on. Always cool to see the title on when these guys are you know, competing. But good stuff there. Really, really liked it. You can make the argument that, you know, some of the turn, like the turning kicks that you got from Pecorin, that his turn in the dump that he got at the end of the fourth were the real separators on the card. But really, I thought Porn Petra was just kind of fighting from behind. Overall, I thought Pecorin was a better fighter, and he rightfully won and moved forward. Going to go ahead and get into other news. You know, I try to get that stadium stuff in there because I want people to really focus on some of the bigger stadium stuff. Shout out to Muay Thais. If you guys have never followed this guy before, I've mentioned him before in the podcast. Muay Thais is, you know, ties like a shirt. So M-U-A-Y-T-I-S. I mentioned this guy before because, you know, guy or gal, I'm not sure, but they have been uploading fights on a regular basis for a few years now. They get a lot of stadium fights up, and I was able to get a hold of all of these fights through Muay Thais, so shout out to Muay Thais, and keep doing the good works. Keep doing a good job of getting those fights to the people. I'll keep doing my part in trying to bring up the major shows and the major fights on, you know, from the stadiums on my podcast, but really, I just want to give credit to a guy who's been putting those big-time Muay Thai fights out there for a really long time. Shout out, and thanks for keeping the sport rolling. Going to go ahead and get into some other talk. Got a couple of big cards coming out this weekend on Sunday. Well, we are going to get Infusion Live. It's going down, and I believe this card is in Holland. It's in Antwerp. Nope, it's in Belgium. It's in Antwerp, Belgium. Sorry, just got had to sift through my notes. And we've got a really solid card, a lot of names that they've used before. First of all, Hachim El Goy is going to go against Laurent Atrifi. And Hachim El Goy is a high-level fighter who I would love to see fight on the glory level one day. I think that he'll get the victory here. He does a lot of tricky things. And it's unfortunate that he fought under the, I mean, the rules at Tatneft of if it's, you know, if there's no KO after three, you get an extra round. The winner of the extra round wins the fight. That hurt him because he beat Alexander Shevchenko. Like he beat, you know, a lot of elite guys in that organization. But the thing that was his downfall, you know, I can't remember if it was Alexander Shevchenko, but he beat a lot of elite guys in that. But I know that some guys would just kind of fight him tough and then wait for that extra round and then go all out in the extra round. Or Hachim, who is a kicking machine, he'll score to the inside, he'll score the switch kick, he'll do the peel with his hands. He's got a really tricky knee that he kind of uses almost like he's like stabbing a guy. Like he just kind of picks the knee up and like jabs his hip in. It's not a full extension. There's no big drive from his hip. Like he doesn't switch stance for it. He just leans it out there for you to kind of run into it. And he does a good job. I'm excited to see him compete. Edvin Kaibas is a guy I've seen fight for them before. He takes on Yasin Beitar. I think this could be a very entertaining scrap. You know, I guess it's one of those fights where I think a star could emerge from it. So I'm very curious to see how this battle breaks out. And Mon Barlow is back in there against Soroya Harissa. And Soraya is a fighter I've seen before, but Iman Barlow is in one of the elite categories of fighter in the world in her weight class. Iman Barlow, I consider her very much like I think of like a Jose Aldo. I'm not going to pick against these people until they lose, you know? Mayweather, not pick against you until you lose. I really, really believe that Iman Barlow is very exceptional at this weight class, and she's going to be tough for anybody to beat. I've got her winning this fight very, very one-sidedly. But Soraya could have some really good moments, and I'm curious to see what she brings to the table on Sunday. Ismael Benali is going to take on Tayfun Askan. I've seen Askan fight before. I think that this fight is just kind of like one of those middle ground fights where I'll know more afterwards. But I've definitely seen both guys compete. I'm more familiar with Askan. Benali, I haven't seen fight as much. So I'm going to go ahead and stay in the middle ground here before picking a winner. I just don't know enough about Benali before I can, you know, make a fight or a pick for or against him. No, Nordin Bin Maw is a guy I do know, and Antonio Gomez is another guy I do know. Antonio Gomez is, not only does he train in Spain, but he trains at Musi Gym sometimes, if I'm remembering correctly. And I definitely like his skill set. He's a very skilled guy. I've got him beating Benoit. It should be entertaining scrap there. And then the main event on the card, as far as the breakdown I have, has Ilias Belal going against Zahid Zarov of Uzbekistan. And Ilias Belal is one of the young up-and-coming fighters in the world. He is 20 years old. He has such diverse strikes and crazy work rate. We're talking about a guy who can throw an uppercut and then an inside kick to a knee and then flurry a combination with a head kick afterwards. Not afraid to do anything in there. Crazy cardio, crazy push. Did a good job in the K-1 fight that he had not too long ago where he was in the reserve there, got the opportunity. This is just a guy who needs big fight opportunities. Just moving forward, pushing, you know, pushing himself with each new opponent and getting the opportunity to fight elite guys on a regular basis. That's how you do it. Good job by Infusion. This card should be on infusionlive.com, streaming on Sunday. It should be mid-afternoon for most of you guys. It's free. Go watch this free fight card. I will post it on Twitter when it's happening. I'll try to do fight by fight. But man, you guys gotta, these opportunities are free for you, so you really gotta jump on them. Really gotta go for them. Before I get to the main card that I want to do for this weekend, because, of course, going out tomorrow, we've got the Top Ken World Series as it continues. I'm going to go ahead and jump into a couple of news and notes. First of all, Rico Verheerven, Myrtle Grenard, and Andy Sauer are going to be fighting in Kunlun Fight 15. Andy Sauer's fought for the promotion before, but the reason why I like this, and this is going down the fourth, and I'm not going to get into who's, you know, fighting, you know, who and what, you know, Sidichai is, you know, Myrtle Grenard's fighting Sidichai, Andy Sauer's fighting Zhao Fukai. The reason why I wanted to bring this up is because kickboxing prize fighters are getting the opportunity to compete and make money. All I care about. I really want there to be a home for it. Because there's so many world championships and so on, I definitely want Glory to be the, you know, UFC of kickboxing, if that's the case. You know, I've got no problem for of saying that or seeing that. I got no problem whatsoever. I want to see high-level fights, and I want to see high-level opportunities for kickboxers to make money. This is another opportunity. China's doing a good job of having so many kickboxing shows. They bring over Americans. They bring over Europeans. China is doing a great job of having, you know, whoever the promoters are in that area. They've got a fan base that comes out and supports the sport. I love when they put on shows. These guys, all three guys, two are signed to Glory. Andy Sauer, still very much an active, you know, free agent, just kind of fights where he wants to fight, which I love. I love that they got this opportunity, you know, and that's what I want. I want to see more guys getting to fight as prize fighters around the world. The sport absolutely has to have it. In other news, Yukao 12 and 13 are going to be going down in the Macron Stadium in Bolton. They did this before earlier in the year where they did 12 and 13, or they did like 10 and 11 or 9 and 10, I want to say, on the same weekend of fights. That's what we want to see. Elite guys getting opportunities. Yukao, who I worried about, I was like, man, they're a good promotion, but they're not fighting enough. They are an Italian-based brand, if I'm remembering correctly, made in Thailand, but I believe the promotion started, or the promotion and fight gear owners are based out of Italy. But they started there, started in Italy, started doing shows sporadically, realized they weren't doing a whole bunch of shows in a year. Now they found a home in England, who I really feel England does a great job of backing its combat sports. I've said it about all their combat sports. And they're continuing to move their brand and continue to give opportunities to their fighters. This is huge. I love that they have a consistent schedule that we can follow. High-level Muay Thai guys getting opportunities. A lot of the lower card guys, definitely locals. They're filling that low card with the locals. But once you get to those top four or five fights, there are high-level opportunities for some of the elite 30 fighters in the world at whatever weight class. That's what I want to see on a regular basis. I am going to go ahead and talk about a couple of single fights that went down. Apparently, there was a regional fight where Alim Nabayev gets a victory over Zamal Yusupov. I'm in favor of that because it means Alim Nabayev, who's a young up-and-coming star, gets to compete. Don't know how well he did. This is just something that the promoter of Legend had posted on Instagram. I didn't know if it was an old fight, but it just said regional Legend show. If Legend's doing regional shows, that's a win. I want to see more opportunities for elite-level fighters. if they are having young guys getting the opportunities to compete in tournaments that aren't as big, to prep them for the bigger shows, that's a win-win for the sport. That is the sport growing and doing a great job. Also, in a promotion somewhere in the middle of nowhere, France, I don't know what or where who held the event, but Kareem Gaji got a victory over Alexander Setsarenko. It is an avenged victory because I believe Setsarenko beat Gaji, nine months ago, on one of the undercards for Glory. So Kareem Gaji, who's very skilled, I've talked about him before. He's got a good style for kickboxing, has a good combination of low kick flow, stays in, exchanges. Also, he's an awesome breakdancer, so I can't wait for him to win on Glory and then start breakdancing one day. But I love that he's fighting and staying active and he gets this victory. I heard Nicky Holtzkin might be fighting on the 24th against Yusuf Karakaya in Turkey, but I haven't gotten a lot of information on that. I just heard that it might be happening. I checked on his Wikipedia page, and they mentioned the fight too, but I didn't hear anything official, so I wouldn't go, hold my breath over the possibility of that card. I just wanted to bring it up to you guys in case you were interested. And then also, as far as, get in that social media buzz, Cyrus Washington, one of his spinning back kick. He got a spinning back kick KO. I'm not sure the gentleman that he's able to score it against. But for those who watch Cyrus Washington, in the first round of his fights, he'll come out with like a combination low kick style. And then like halfway through the round, maybe a minute into the round, he starts to play with flash. He starts to play with spinning back kicks and jumping hook kicks and stuff like that. And this time he was able to score one clean and get a KO. It floated all over the internet. Not only were my fight friends posting it, but some of my secular friends, secular to fight sports, I should say, some of my friends who are not into combat sports, but just into sports in general, they started to post it. It is a really cool KO. But anytime you get something like this or something like Raymond Daniels, double kick KO, when things kind of go viral and they become a different kind of kick or they become a different kind of score, I definitely want to give it its mention on the podcast because that's big. That's big when those kind of things happen. So good for the sport, and I'm glad that, Cyrus Washington, who, struggles to get some of the more elite guys, but does a good job of keeping himself fighting on a regular basis. He looks to compete against guys all over the world, fights in the New York area a lot, coaches and teaches, in a gym in the New York area or on the East Coast. I like the things that he's doing. So good stuff there. Going to go ahead and wrap the show up with the talk of what would be the biggest card or the biggest fight card of the weekend. Before I get to it, there's also a card on December 20th tomorrow where Alex Pereira, that is the gentleman who had such the awesome KO earlier in the year in Glory, where he won the regional tournament, where he got a big time KO over Jacoby, then went on to win that regional tournament against Sahak Paparian, and then he went into the main tournament where I believe he lost, if my mind is remembering correctly, to eventual champion Artem Levin. I believe they fought in the either the first round or the semifinals. But Alex Pereira did a great job. He's having a really good year, and he's been keeping himself busy when he's not fighting in Glory. Like I mentioned before, keep fighting. The names that I talked about before with Vihirvin and Sauer and Myrtle Grenard, when the opportunity comes to fight in your Glory level event or K1 or whatever the case is, fight for them. But before that, if some promotion is putting on a show and they want to use you, get your money. Go out there and compete. So really, really excited that that opportunity has come his way and that he'll be competing soon. So back to what I mentioned before with the Top King World Series, and as the bracketing works out, it's looking like where you're going to get Andre Kulibin is going to be facing, as I'm seeing the brackets, he's going to be going against what would be, hold on, I don't want to mispronounce this gentleman's name, Zanaev. So Kyal Zanaev, that is your first bracket breakdown. I always worry whenever I'm doing the Russian names. And then the next name, and this is who, for those who love Bukhau, the person fighting Bukhau Bechamek will be Ukrainian fighter Dmytro Konstantinov. There we go, Dmytro Konstantinov. And I thought he did a good job in his first fight. I thought that, he moved well, and I thought that is a you know, decent level fight that I expect Bukhava to win, but I thought that that was interesting matchmaking for that round. Then Murat Gregorian goes against Nicholas Larson, who did a good job both fighting in glory and the opportunity they had in glory. And then, of course, Murat Gregorian, who's been fighting in It's Showtime, K1, Glory. He's been a busy guy, combination style, always pushes the pace. That fight's going to be all action. And then the last fight is Marcin Pocheta, who had the very weird win where, you know, the both gentlemen fell on the ground and a guy was knocked out by, you know, a takedown that he attempted. He's going to go against Reese McAllister. And the interesting thing about this card is this 70kg tournament is the best 70kg tournament for the year. Like, it started off as a 16-man tournament, and no matter what you thought of it, you know, how high the level or low the level you thought of this Top King tournament was, I think there's some solid names, not as high as it could be. You know, we don't have no Petrosian, don't have no Robin Van Roosmalen. Those guys are not in it. But you got to give credit to getting Larson, getting Gregorian, getting Bukhau. Andre Kulibin is used to fighting a little bit smaller. Reese McAllister can fight smaller. This is a solid 70kg tournament. And to the best of my knowledge, I don't think there's another 70kg tournament that offered what this offered. So excited about these fights tomorrow, and I think that they're just going to do this round of fights, and then the four-man in the final is another card. But we're going to go ahead and talk about a few of the super fights on this card before I leave it. Portsanai Sitmanshah is fighting again this week. So this will be his third fight in, I want to say, what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks? So he's staying consistent. And the scary thing is, he's been stopped in some of those losses. So, though I want him to do well, though I love his combination style, I am never a fan of seeing anybody, you know, taking the damage that comes from this sport. Sangmini Sorotempi is going to go against Kaman Kwok. Sangmini is a guy who fought on Thai Fight. He's, you know, been getting some international opportunities. He doesn't have the most aesthetically pleasing international style, but I do think that he's a solid fighter. Sam A, watch Sam A fight any day of the week. Sam A is going to go against Ishaq Sayed, and there's a couple other fights on the undercard, but those main ones are the ones that I want to talk about, the main top. The last ones of Pime against Mustafa Abdullahi, and then we've got Kato Fukuda as he takes on Chan K. Tick, and then we've got Yusuke Atahara as he takes on Ming Tong. That is the rest of the super fights on that card. I think that this is a solid card in Hong Kong. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited to watch the stream. As soon as I find the stream, I'll do my best to post it. So that way you guys have the opportunity to watch the stream with me when I'm watching it, if you're still up at that time. So I'll do my best to have it up if I'm still up at that time. But I want to keep everybody involved in the kickboxing scene to the best of my ability. I want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast show again. I will be taking next week off, and then I'll be back with my year-end award. So I'll go ahead and post on Twitter for people to kind of send things in. I'm also going to be writing a few things for Liver Kick this week. You know, just some thoughts for people to take into the new year of fighting and kick fighting. So basically, we want to go with, we got glory events. Look at your best glory fighters in the world. Look at your best female fighters, female fights in the world. Look at what Lion Fight did. Look at what, you know, Kunlun fights did. Look at, you know, S Cup. We want to talk about fighters of the year and so on. So if you've got some thoughts, you've got some memories, you've got some things on your mind, go ahead and send those to me on, you know, Twitter or on, you know, Facebook for those who follow me on Facebook. Thank you all again for supporting the kickboxing sport, and I'll do my best to get back to you on a regular basis, as always. So see you in 2 weeks, and we will have a good breakdown of what happened in the kickboxing year. Thank you very much. And, of course, I will have my year-end kickboxing highlight. I'm going to go ahead and keep that tradition going. Have my highlight and cut in 2 weeks, too. So thank you again, and God bless. Peace.